ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Stephen Hill, who is a writer, columnist, and political professional. He is the co-founder of Fair Vote and the former director of the Political Reform Program at the New America Foundation. His books include 10 Steps to Repair American Democracy, Fixing Elections, The Failure of America's Winner-Take-All Politics, and Whose Vote Counts, written with his friend Rob Ritchie. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephen Hill.
Thank you, Ian. Pleasure to be here.
And these elections that we've just witnessed, believe it or not, they're not over. I mean, the count is still going on in Arizona, and there could be a change in the Senate seat. There's already been a couple of Congress people whose votes have changed the electoral map. So I just find that the whole system, having spent some time in Europe and other countries, and even in Mexico next door, where none of this happens, it's just an continuing embarrassment. Do you think that after 2000, I thought people were sufficiently embarrassed that something was going to be done to fix it. But it's almost as if both parties want to have a broken system.
Well, it's certainly, we never did fix the system after 2000. There were some changes, some of them for better, some for the worse, actually. But you start at the top. The United States is the only established democracy that I'm aware of that doesn't have any National Elections Commission that basically sets the standards that all the different regions and states and counties have to abide by and basically creates good standards instead of having what we have now is just the wild, wild west, different counties, different states doing different things. For example, in Arizona, the Secretary of State, a fellow by the name of Ken Bennett, he was originally appointed to the position, then he did win election in his own right. But he was the co-chair of the Mitt Romney campaign in Arizona. So the top election official was the co-chair for one of the candidates in the presidential election. I mean, to give you an example of how ridiculous this is, we have a federal law that says that federal employees cannot be involved in the political process because we don't want the president or any elected official ordering public employees to go out there and work for their reelection. We put a firewall between those who are, you know, federal employees and the political process. But there's no firewall like this between the top election official and the political process. So when you have that kind of thing going on, and we've seen this before, Catherine Harris in Secretary of State of Florida in 2000, she was the co-chair of the George W. Bush campaign. Ken Blackwell in Ohio in 2004, Secretary of State, co-chair of the George W. Bush reelection campaign. This is ridiculous. This is the type of thing that other countries look at and say, this looks like a third world country when you have that kind of thing going on. And keeping in mind that Ken Bennett, he gained a small moment of national notoriety when he tried to prevent Barack Obama from being on the 2012 presidential election ballot in Arizona because he said he wanted to see Obama's birth certificate in Hawaii, from Hawaii. So this is the type of individual that was overseeing the election. So are we any surprised that in Arizona, suddenly, we're having all this controversy over what's known as provisional ballots and early absentee ballots not being counted? At this point, Arizona has hundreds of thousands of ballots that have not been counted, and they have several congressional races at U.S. Senate and U.S. House that are all well within the margin of error of the number of ballots that are still to be counted. And the provisional ballots are ballots that people come to the polls and they're told, okay, you're not on our rolls, we let you vote, but we don't count your ballot to the very end, and we look to see if you're really a registered voter. This is a provisional ballot. The right to a provisional ballot was created by the Help America Vote Act after the fiasco in Florida in 2000. And it's actually a good thing, except that they didn't create, going back to, you know, we don't have any National Elections Commission, they didn't create standards that all the states and all the counties are going to use for administering these provisional ballots. So some use these provisional ballots in a way that basically try to get, you know, people, poor people, minorities to use provisional ballots. And then sometimes there's a lot of evidence that they never even get counted. So this is the state of the art in the United States today. And some states are better than others. Minnesota is quite good. Washington is good. Wisconsin runs good elections. But states like Arizona, it's practically like a third world country.
Again, I'm speaking with Stephen Hill, who is the co-founder of Fair Vote and the former director of the political reform program at the New America Foundation. So not only, and by the way, you mentioned that that in most other countries where they have clean elections and efficient elections and accurate elections, they have a National Election Commission. We've got the Federal Election Commission. And after the disaster in Florida, they were given a lot of money, and God knows what it was spent on, but they are completely broken. I mean, it's not as if, you know, not only do we not have a National Federal Election Commission, what we do have is a complete catastrophe now. It's totally paralyzed, and I don't understand why Obama hasn't appointed new people. I mean, isn't it still a Republican majority?
Well, after the Florida fiasco in 2000, the Help America Vote Act created something called the Electoral Assistance Commission, the EAC, that was supposed to work with the FEC to make our elections better. But pretty much it's all just recommendations to the states and the counties. They really don't have any type of mandate to tell the states and the counties how to run elections and what standards to use, what practices to use. There's no one out there really figuring out what are the best practices. You know, I mean, the average election official, for example, it's a person who really has no training in elections. They drifted into working in elections, and their training has all been on the job. But today, elections are not what they were 20 years ago. You're talking about using sophisticated computers, optical scanners, databases, and yet these election officials all get on-the-job training instead of really having a trained professional corps of election officials across the country. We just don't have anything like this, and other countries do. They give real training to their election officials. So, you know, a lot of it is just a complete lack of focus, oversight of the elections industry, the vendors, the standards used. I mean, there's more regulations for casinos and slot machines than there is for our elections in the United States. And so we've just left it up to, the couple thousand counties out there to just in some ways do however they want to do it. And this is the result. It's not a surprise when you just have this decentralized hodgepodge election administration that you're going to have this kind of discrepancy and poor quality in certain places.
So, Stephen Hill, not only are the election systems broken in the various states, and particularly this embarrassing situation is continuing in Arizona, where the older white Republican establishment is clearly trying to suppress the votes of the new young Latino emerging majority. What I find shocking about this election is, first of all, the voter turnout in 2012 was only 58% of eligible voters, which was lower than the 2000 turnout of 62%. And then even in 2004, there was a turnout of 60%. And that means that 93 million eligible voters did not cast their ballots. And it is even worse in the congressional elections. It didn't even reach 50% of the voter turnout.
Yes, so this is, we always wait after each election to see what was the voter turnout, and hoping that we, especially in a presidential election year, we hit 60%. And keeping in mind that most of the other established democracies around the world, they regularly have elections where their voter turnout is 75, 80, 85. Some of them get up to 90% voter turnout. And we're lucky if we get 60% for presidential election, which we didn't hit this year. And when you look at the votes across the country for Congress, we actually had fewer than 50% voter turnout. So this is to elect, a powerful federal national legislature, and we can't even get 50% of Americans to turn out to vote. this is rather troubling, I believe. I mean, we've known that we have low turnout for some time, and we kind of beat ourselves up over it, and then some people try to say, oh, well, maybe it's no big deal. You have people like George Will, conservative columnist, who says people don't turn out to vote because they're satisfied. Well, I mean, you know, fact of the matter is we know who doesn't turn out to vote, and overwhelmingly it tends to be poor people, minorities, people of color, young people. These aren't the people that you tend to think of as being the most satisfied in American society. So that excuse rings rather hollow. But what I think the reason why we don't turn out is because, one, there's a real lack of choice. We have a two-party system, and America is a very diverse country, and we've reached a point where the two-party system just really can't appeal to enough people to really make them feel like, yeah, that's my party, that's my candidate, and they turn out to vote. And then secondly, it's because in the American political system, geography is extremely important about whether or not you count in our political system. I mean, we just saw in a presidential election, for example, where we knew it was going to come down to just a handful of battleground states. So everybody in California, our vote really didn't count for much because everyone knew Obama was going to win California. So Obama didn't really visit here except to raise money. Romney didn't visit here. And most states were that way. So, you know, when you know your vote doesn't really count much and the candidates aren't out there trying to get you to turn out, then people don't turn out. And it turns out when it comes to, you know, electing our state legislature and the U.S. House of Representatives, that same thing prevails. Most districts are so lopsided to be either Democrat or Republican that there's no incentive really to turn out to vote, and the candidates don't really have to work hard to get your vote. Now a lot of people say that it's that way because of redistricting abuses, but FairVote and others have been doing some great research showing that's really not what it is. It's not because of redistricting abuses. It's because people have self-selected them into these partisan enclaves. You know, liberals and Democrats and progressives dominate in cities and along the coasts, and the conservatives dominate in the rural areas and the flyover regions, as we call it. So it's really hard, even if you have an independent redistricting commission, as we just had in California for the first time. They still didn't succeed really in drawing competitive districts in California or really shaking things up in any meaningful way. So we really have to start looking at other things like proportional representation, public financing of campaigns, and other reforms that are going to open up this political system and make it more a voter-centered system instead of a politician-centered system.
Well, certainly, if you had proportional representation instead of the winner-take-all system that we have, that would be a big boon to third parties, so that you wouldn't have the anomaly of voting for third-party candidates that will actually hurt a political party that's much closer to your preference. And there wasn't a great deal of evidence that that happened in this particular race, but it has happened before in American political races and presidential races. Again, how do you get that simple change that you list your choices 1, 2, 3, so that means that there's more diversity and more chance of third-party candidates getting some traction. Clearly, the duopoly is not interested in changing the system. What will it take to change the system?
Well, it just takes changing some laws, either through the legislature or state or by initiative process. I think there are some legislators from the Democrat and Republican parties that aren't satisfied with the status quo. So finding good ones who will work with passing these political changes. And I think sometimes starting at the local level and moving up to the state level, the federal level, you know, with the Democrats in control of the Senate and the presidency and the Republicans in control of the House, it's going to be paralyzed for the next 2 years at least, I would think. So there's no point in really thinking about even trying to work at that level. But I think it also starts with people just recognizing what's holding America back. I mean, so many people have, false notions of what the problems are. And if we're not clear on what the problems are, we sure aren't going to be clear on the solutions. So, a lot of what I've been doing lately is just trying to get people to think about why is it that the Republicans won fewer seats at the U.S. in the U.S. House of Representatives, fewer votes at the U.S. House of Representatives level this time around, and yet they won a majority of the votes. And you know, why is that? Well, it turns out that the Democrats are actually poorly positioned to win a House majority because their vote has become more concentrated around cities, and it's really hard to draw fair districts for Democrats because they are so concentrated. And if the national vote had been tied, for example, between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, the Republicans still would have won 245 seats in the U.S. House, and the Democrats would have won 190 because of these partisan demographics of where people live. So, you know, we really, if you want to see a fair House of Representatives and a fair proportionality between the number of seats you win and the number of votes you win, there's really no way to do it under the existing system. You really have to start looking at things like proportional representation. And so we're just trying to really educate people about that so that people are clear on what the problem is and what the solutions could be.
So just in closing, Stephen Hill, let's examine the states in terms of who does a better job. And my understanding is that Wisconsin and Minnesota have always been conducted pretty fair, clean, and efficient elections. We know about Arizona being an embarrassment, and as is Florida. What are the better states, and why do they do it better? And is there any incentive to get these poorly run elections in states changed, or do they, as I suspect, want to have a broken system? Because if they have a broken system, they can manipulate it. So tell us who does it well and who does it poorly.
Well, I think you named some of the good states. Maine runs very good elections. Connecticut, many states are running good elections. We haven't seen controversy in most states. It's really, you know, the usual states: Florida, Ohio, Arizona, of course, sometimes Louisiana. Some of the southern states have had problems, and they tend to be states where they have this ridiculous tradition of decentralization, and just, you know, there's nobody sort of trying to figure out, how do we design this system to work well? Instead, it's just this devil-may-care attitude of, whatever, we'll just do it, you know, however we've always done it. And those are the states that tend to get into trouble. So I think that I would look for, well, I mentioned that the federal level is going to be kind of broken because of the split between the Senate and the House and the presidency and who controls them. I think it is possible that, you know, Barack Obama could move on this sort of thing. This is the type of thing that they should be able to find some bipartisanship on, and he even could use executive orders to some degree to basically create some sort of National Elections Commission or give the current Electoral Assistance Commission more power to not only create some national standards about how, for example, you're going to administer provisional ballots, but also to partner with the states and counties and local governments to run good elections. I mean, this is something that's just crying out to be addressed, and we'll see if Barack Obama in his second term is ready to grapple with it.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Stephen Hill.
It's been my pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Stephen Hill, who is a writer, columnist, and political professional. He's the co-founder of Fair Vote and the former director of the Political Reform Program at the New America Foundation. His books include 10 Steps to Repair American Democracy, Fixing Elections, The Failure of America's Winner-Take-All Politics, and Whose Vote Counts, written with his friend Rob Ritchie. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for streaming and podcasting at ianmasters.com, where we welcome your comments. And the conversation continues online at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.